post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
It's the Australian Community Radio Network. With me in the studio are our delightful football opinionated experts, Patrick Bordier and Terry Henry.
I come with my opinion.
We love your opinion. And
I'd
Terry,
like to be known as Chief Football Analyst of the Near Post from now on,
chief
I think.
Why do you earn the chief status?
Well, if Fozzie can do it, why can't I?
I think we could all be Chief Footballer now, analysts.
Too many chiefs and not enough Indians, though, I reckon. That's the trouble.
And also joining us in the studio is our favourite Ghanaian fan, Fred. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, and go Ghana.
Go Ghana, doing very well. I'm sure he's very happy, and we'll be talking about that later on. But coming up in the next half hour, we're talking about the Socceroos' spirited exit from the World Cup. More controversy in South Africa other than the Jabulani ball, thank God for once, paddy time, and much, much more. If you have an inquiry or you'd like to send in some suggestions for the show, you can do so on our email, flanagan.amon@gmail.com. Alternatively, you can catch the podcast on www.nearpost.blogspot.com. And we're also streamed on iTunes as well as Halftime Heroes. Again, we're not doing anything different while Eamon's away. We're doing our show dedication. And this week, I've decided to dedicate it to the poor England squad, who was so clearly robbed of that goal. And it's left many English fans wondering what would have happened if that had gone in. Would it have changed the dynamics of the game?
Well, they'd been playing so well in the tournament up till then. You'd just assume they were just going to roll all the way through Germany. But no.
I think the worst thing about it is that, you know, we keep hearing about the hand of God. What is it, you know, 20-odd years after,
it's been
after,
some time.
It, after it happened. Now we're going to hear about this for the next 20 years, with the sort of conveniently overlooking the fact that they were outplayed for 85 minutes for pre-game.
They just didn't bring it to the World Cup.
Them, you know.
Yeah, look, it should have been a goal.
Look, and what about that whole fact of, you know, is this karma paying them a visit after the 1966 World Cup events?
I'm not quite old enough to remember that one, Lucy. I'm sorry.
Just by 1 year.
Just by 1 year, that's right. Moving on, we've got our quiz, and it's an easy one, I hope, for this week, lads. And the quiz question is, who is the president of FIFA?
President of FIFA?
Yes.
Is this Bill Clinton?
Should be?
Because I've seen him a lot on the telly lately.
Mick Jagger seems to be playing quite a role. And Michel Platini has a lot to say, but he's not the president,
no,
I don't think.
No, he's not the president.
Soon
any
to
ideas?
Be.
Any ideas?
John Terry?
No.
He'd like to be. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Then we'll go with Sepp.
Yep.
Good old Sepp Blatter, and we'll be talking about him in the upcoming news segment, which we'll move right on to now. In the first news item, Harry Kewell has revealed that the Socceroos feel they have let the country down with an early World Cup exit. Many of the Socceroos have begun the long journey home from South Africa after their 2-1 victory over Serbia was not enough to see them continue to the round of 16. Sad and emotional times for Aussie fans, lads?
It is sad and emotional, but they ended on a high. They ended on the Socceroos that we know and love. I would have liked to see maybe more of Harry. But,
Absolutely.
You know.
We were actually talking, Paddy and I, the other day about what we needed to do on the show. Maybe we actually thought one thing was an official near post apology to Brett Holman.
I think so.
I, for one, and I know you too, Paddy, we haven't been the biggest Brett Holman fans over the last year or so, but I have to take my hat off him. He was probably the pick of the Socceroos, and his goal, the second goal for Australia the other night, was fantastic.
I'm so sorry, Brett, and I'll be looking you up in the phone book, Holman B, and ringing you up to apologise. We have dragged your name through the mud for a number of months, if not years now.
So we apologise unreservedly, but we don't take anything back we said about Craig Moore or Vinny Grella.
But didn't Holman shine? How good was he?
Absolutely brilliant. Controversy continues to surround the 2010 World Cup, with FIFA officials coming under fire after the respective England versus Germany and Argentina versus Mexico matches. Despite calls for video technology to be introduced, FIFA boss Sepp Blatter refuses to address the issues. Also today, Gus Hiddink came out and threw his 2 cents in and said that Blatter should resign if he continues to dismiss the pleas for change. Lads?
Breaking news. And you know that we break news on this show.
Absolutely. We're not first here at the Near Post.
But I read on the interweb just recently that Blatter was holding a press conference soon in the next few days, and it's going to be about perhaps some rule changes in regard to goal line technology.
And look, FIFA did actually come out, I mean, alongside that as well, and admit that the Jabalani ball was flawed as well, which we'll talk about later on. But a lot of red faces for FIFA at the moment. Despite the trials and tribulations, Germany has advanced to the semi-finals after their 4-1 win over England. Argentina defeated Mexico 3-1. Uruguay took down the Korea public 2-1. Ghana, Fred is going to be very proud, has done South Africa proud by nabbing a 2-1 result over the United States. And the Netherlands have also qualified for the semis after beating Slovakia 2-1.
And if you're listening on the podcast and on Community Radio Network, you'll know the results of the Spain-Portugal and the Paraguay-Japan game. So we're assuming that Portugal and Japan have got through.
Correct. We'll throw in our analysis or about Spain. Those games later on.
Portugal 7-0, surely.
And as if we haven't had enough of hearing the sound of vuvuzelas, we now have to hear about the Jabalani ball again. Like I was saying earlier, FIFA have admitted that the ball is flawed but won't act on the problem until after the tournament. A meeting with manufacturer Adidas is also set to take place. Now, they're also scheduled, well, they've been agreed to hold the contract until the 2014 games. Now, do you think that something might change after this? Has this kind of put the nail in the coffin for Adidas?
What have they said what is flawed about it? Is it not round or something? Are they suddenly discovered, oh, they'd be playing with a rugby ball because it's in South Africa?
Keeps going over the crossbar an awful amount of times.
Japanese didn't have any problems with their free kicks.
Yeah, how good are they? They are the masters, aren't they?
Germany certainly didn't seem to be having any problems with their ball against England.
It just seems to be maybe about one and two teams. Yeah, the losing team, right, perhaps, that seems to have a problem.
And every team is using the same balls. I don't see the problem, you know.
Yeah.
It's not that there are different balls being used in different games. It's the same ball. So.
It is. And, you know, they also did come out and say that the teams were given the brawl prior to going into the tournament. But I think the biggest issue, particularly, you know, watching the game, you can see that the curve that the ball takes and, I mean, the bounce on that as well. So I think it is a problem. And a lot of the keepers and players also have come out and said, look, it's just not happening. So, interesting. We're moving on to the national news now. Melbourne Heart's first official match against A-League opponents, the Brisbane Roar, ended in disappointment after they capitulated to a 2-0 loss in Toowoomba on Friday night. Mitch Nichols and Matt McKay slotted in the winners.
Is it too early to call for the Melbourne Heart to be disbanded?
I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I'd say a score.
It's still early days. I mean, could they be the next Gold Coast United?
Yeah, that's right. 4,000 people again.
A list of confirmed transfers for the upcoming 2010-2011 Hyundai A-League season was released on Sunday. The more notable names included Sergio van Dijk and Nigel Bugard, who have moved to Adelaide United, Liam Reddy and Nicky Carl to Sydney FC, Daniel McBreen to the Central Coast Mariners, and Michael Theoklotos to the Brisbane Roar, amongst many others. Not surprisingly, though, the Brisbane Roar suffered the most key outgoing transfers. So, a lot to answer for there, Ange Postecoglou.
Yeah, it's maybe not textbook way to run a club, to let pretty much two-thirds of your team go.
And not only that, to actually kind of, you know, anger enough players for them to actually leave on their own accord. So
yeah,
issues...
That takes a special sort of management skill, I think,
He's well-equipped in ways we don't know. Mm. The Central Coast Mariners have signed a former teammate of Argentinian Dynamo Lionel Messi. 25-year-old Patricio Perez credits the new Mariners coach, Graham Arnold, to enticing him to the A-League. Now, I don't know what words were exchanged here between Graham Arnold and Patricio, but you know, big credit to them for basically drawing in a big player.
Yeah, is he a big player apart from Lionel Messi's teammate?
I mean, he has had a few stints, you know, in the under-20s for the Argentinian team there, and I mean, he's done really quite well on his own. So playing with those experienced players, you'd like to think that a bit of that either A, rubbed off on him, or B, he was already bringing something to the table.
Lifestyle and beaches. Surely that's how they got Robbie Fowler to Townsville of all places. They can get anyone to the coast on that call.
Well, apparently Graham was spruiking about how strong the A-League is and how well it's developing and coming along. So, you know, either he's lying through his teeth or, you know, he's actually got the goods to back it up.
Right.
And finally, the countdown to the upcoming Hyundai A-League season is underway after Melbourne Victory fanatics braved the freezing weather conditions to watch their team being put through their paces at their first official training session.
There were people watching the training session?
There were people that turned up to watch this training session.
That's pretty good. Go Melbourne Victory.
Devoted fans, and B, you know, it's just got to show you that the spirit and the community that Melbourne Victory have going down there. I just wonder if the Melbourne Heart are going to be able to kind of, you know, equal that as well.
Look, they like we were sort of referencing before, they surely they've got to do better than Gold Coast United. I think the Melbourne market has shown that it can take new teams. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of potential here.
Mm. I agree, Terry.
Yeah, I think that's very impressive that people actually bothered to turn up to watch a training session. I'm just trying to imagine that if Canberra did have an A-League team and, you know, it's June, July, training on a Tuesday night, how many people would actually go out to watch that?
Particularly in this cold weather, yes, on the way to the show, yes, it was 4 degrees, so interesting stuff there. We're going to go straight into our topics that we've got, and my first one on the table, of course, it has to be the Australia versus Serbia game. Why weren't we playing this like this from the outset?
Very good question. I think... Well, obviously, they had a lot of pride at stake, and you can see that. You can tell from the players' reactions. They were bitterly disappointed after the Germany game, and they, also they were still in with a chance at that point. They were still in with a chance of going through, and they wanted to give it their best shot. I do have to say, though, I think we're kind of looking at the game a little bit through rose-tinted glasses, because Serbia actually had several chances in the first half and probably outplayed us and could have put us away, and then we would have all been moaning and complaining and how awful we were. Mm-hmm. But the second half performance was much, much better. And like I said, Holman came on again, and he was absolutely fantastic.
Mm. It's interesting,
Paddy,
isn't it? Because we and I include myself in the Socceroos here, have been accused of playing naive, sort of attacking football, just going all out to win a game. There's no subtlety to our game. Vabeek brought in a very defensive sort of mindset, playing away. He would often grind out a result. And there was talk of, you know, the Socceroos becoming a little more, I guess, professional, for want of a better term, in terms of getting results and grinding those out. But really, when it came down to it, the World Cup, we really played that wrongly. When we played against Germany, we had that sort of defensive, trying to get what we possibly could out of the game rather than trying to go and win the game. Mm-hmm. And I think by the time Serbia came along, it was back to the wall, and we had to go all out for it. And I think that's the stuff that you know, you can call it naive, but that's the core of what the Socceroos are really good at, and it's just going for that result. And, you know, we did it. We went... They were our true colours, I felt. You know, that was combative, that was aggressive, and we played to win, and it just showed on the pitch.
There was a lot of criticism that came out, obviously, of their formation and the style that they played and the team selections, and a lot of people actually said, you know, going into the Germany game, they were completely negative about it. They'd actually said, we're not in here with a chance, we don't think we're going to win, you know, in more or less words. And they went in with their not even B-grade team, their C-grade team, and like you said, they weren't in there to win it. So in a World Cup tournament, I think you should be going out there to win every game, no matter what the stakes are and no matter what team you're playing.
In those group stages, you've got the three games, and the soccer has showed it was even goal difference made the difference, you know, and you've got to go all out for those games. There's no holding back on that stuff, unless you're, of course, Brazil, in which you can maybe take your foot off the pedal, but there's only one Brazil.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was a killer. I mean, recovering from a 4-goal deficit was always going to be an uphill challenge. You could blame that. You could also maybe look at the Wilshere miss in the 83rd minute against Fredslot in that second game. And, you know, if he'd put that one away, you know, would have taken a lot of the pressure off in that Serbia game. There was a brief moment there when we went 2-0 up and, you know, we were praying that Germany might score another goal in their game, and, yeah, the dream was still alive, but yeah, it just wasn't to be.
One of the most negative things that I actually heard was, before we move on, was that going into the game against Serbia, there are a few of the squad players actually saying, look, can we hear about how Ghana and Germany are playing throughout the game? And I thought, that's not going to do anything for your team morale, regardless of whether or not they're doing well or badly. You should be going in there with a desperation to win. So it was interesting to see, and unfortunately it's something that we learned from. So... holding on for the next World Cup, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. And there was no way Ghana was going to lose by any big margin. Mm-hmm. Ghana was going to lose by only one or two. So there was no point just waiting to hear what was happening between Ghana and Germany.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree, Fred.
You watched the Ghana-Germany game. I mean, how did Ghana go in that one?
I mean, I think Ghana played well. And, I mean, we thought we could beat Germany so that Australia could qualify with Ghana, but it just didn't happen. I think Ghana played well, and after that game we thought, well, we can go further, and that's what's happening.
Interesting enough, we'll move on to the next topic, which is, should goal line technology be introduced to international football? It's been a very big topic now after we've seen the, you know, the calibre of referees that we've been exposed to in this World Cup at a time that's so crucial for so many teams. You know, what are we talking about here? Is it something that we should bring in to alter the game?
Well, look, I mean, I have to say that England, the goal against England was as clear-cut a goal as you would ever likely to see, and how the officials actually missed it at the time is seems extraordinary. But with the pace of the game these days, and if the assistant referee wasn't close to the goal line, it would have been hard to see. There's two different sort of schools or types of technology or tinkering with the rules that they've been talking about, and one is the actual technology, the Hawkeye kind of stuff that they use in the tennis, which I'm not sure how would work in football, where the ball isn't actually necessarily landing over the line. And then I think there's also the microchip in the ball technology. But the UEFA proposal that Platini is pushing is just for two extra officials standing behind the
goals. Which is what they did in the Europa Leagues, that's right.
Yeah, to make that judgment as to whether or not the ball's crossed the line.
So two officials, because that doesn't happen that often, the ball going in or not going in. You know, so we're going to have two officials who are looking for just that one action, which happens maybe once every 20 games or so at most.
Yeah, it seems crazy, hey?
But one in 20 games, I mean, the thing that I tend to argue here is that, you know, we're at the World Cup tournament, and you know, these points and these goals mean so much to these teams, and it can be a make or break whether or not, like England, they could have perhaps progressed on to the next round.
I guess it comes down to where you draw the line, because, okay, you can, if you've got the technology there, and they reckon they have, that can tell within half a second or something that the ball's crossed the line, then that's fine. It doesn't break up the flow of the game. The referee can make a decision instantly. It's then, I mean, the other controversial incident was the offside, which is a little bit more of a grey area than not so clear cut as whether the ball's over the line. And what do you do each time there's an offside that's in dispute? You go back, and I'd hate to see video replays, you know, like going down the path of rugby league.
Exactly. I think it is a slippery slope, because once we start doing that, you know, do we move to retrospective fouls? And then there's that element of stopping the game actually allows, and you see it, say, for US sports in particular, stopping the game allows for advertising, more money, and that opens, you know, a can of worms I'm not really keen on having. And it's just for the goal line technology, I don't know that it happens that often. I have a few question marks on it. I'm not as decided as everybody else. The other element that I really quite like about football is played the same in the World Cup as it is in just any old league.
Agreed.
You know, it's exactly the same thing. You don't need anything different. You know, jumpers for goalposts. And it just, once we step away from that, where does that line begin? Do we start to insert, you know, the A-League, and then once we... goal decisions on the A-League, and then once we go from the A-League, are we going into the state leagues, you know, and the impact of that across the world? Many countries don't have the money to be having
tinkering
those sort of rule changes.
And what about the two? I hadn't picked up on the fact that it was used in the Europa League, but I mean, where did those goal line officials stand or sit? I mean, because they've got to make a judgment as to whether the whole of the ball has crossed the line. You've really got to be in line with the goal line.
You do. As I understand it, I think they were standing just behind the goal line, towards the back of the net around there. But again, I mean, it can be such a small error in that regard. And like you said, unless they're standing in direct distance of where the ball has actually fallen, you know, the eye can be misleading. And for a moment there, when the goal had gone in, until they'd showed the replays, I didn't know that it had actually gone in.
I really think they should trial the technology in a league somewhere around the world, somewhere, and to show that it can work and show that it can make those decisions could be made instantaneously, and it won't break up the flow of the game, won't hold things up. You know, I think after something like that, the England goal, you know, clearly something needs to be done. I mean, England were robbed of a certain goal.
Something to think about, though, and before we move on, I beg this question. Is it going to be that much of an alteration that it affects the way that the game is actually played and the way that viewers actually watch it? Yes or no?
Yeah, maybe. I think it is. I think any of those changes really do, and it's about that slippery slope. Look at the, let's say, NRL, where any time there's a try, you have to wait for a decision to be made on that. I find that infuriating.
But if it is a technology like a microchip or a Hawkeye kind of thing, and it you know, it even could just be a beep that goes off in the referee's ear in his headphones to say that's crossed the line, then he can make the decision instantaneously. It doesn't hold up the game.
Much better than having to go to a screen and say waiting for the decision and whatnot.
But it does then come back to that point. Well, if you're going to do it for that ruling, what about other controversial rulings? Yeah. And that's where you just don't want to get down and go down.
A lot to think about. We'll move on to the next one, but after that, we're going to bring to you now Paddy Time.
Okay, this week's quote is from the much-regarded BBC. It says, stores and supermarkets in England are counting the cost of England failure. Apparently shirts have gone down to £3. Flags, key rings, stickers are all around £2. But the greater cost is in the pubs. They're suffering a large cost due to less people, less drinking of beer. Pubs aren't making so much money. Mm. Won't anyone think of the pubs?
Won't anyone think of the pubs? Pubs, and the scary thing is that the English fans are ruthless. So I would have hate to have been in a pub or anywhere watching it in a kind of communal setting where they would have just been going absolutely crazy.
It's been a tough tournament. I can't believe that Capello didn't bring a winning mentality to England. I cannot believe
no
it.
No winning mentality. And not only that, also I thought that Wayne Rooney's performance was just awful. And second to that as well, I don't think he's an international player. You know, he came on, particularly in that game against Germany, he came on so almost frustrated and erratic and very nervous. So interesting to see, you know, a lot of players that I notice that do come out and represent their countries in football just don't do as well as they do in their club round matches.
To quote our Pim, he did not show himself.
He did not show himself. But what we also want to talk about here is Ghana's performance. We have our special guest in. Yeah. And we want to talk about their success and how well they've actually done in this World Cup campaign. So, Fred, your thoughts?
Well, like I said at that time, I knew Ghana was going to do well, and we've proved it. Now that we've got into the quarterfinals and playing Uruguay, I'm sure we're going to play the semifinals. The girls are praying. Everybody's praying. We've had a few injuries, like Kevin Prince-Boateng, for example, had a hamstring injury, and Asamoah Gyan also had an ankle injury. But I hear there's been so much press going on that now they're all so Ghana is going to go further, and I'm sure you're going to go into the semifinal.
So Ghana to... my eyebrows were raised at the quarters. We've already moved to the semis. Do you think that you're very confident against Uruguay?
Oh, yeah. Very, very confident.
Uruguay have a great strike force.
Mm. Yeah.
Fulan Suarez, yes.
Ghana.
So you just think they're going to outscore them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm telling you, we're going to give them 3-1 this time.
3-1?
3-1, the predictions. Right. Take those to
now,
the TAB.
Last time you were willing to bet a vehicle of yours.
Exactly.
Is that bet still on?
But unfortunately, that time, no one took me on. Ah. I'm waiting for someone to take me on this time.
So what are we talking, a Camry?
It's a Camry.
Camry. All right.
It's a Camry.
I've got a Lego car I can throw in. I watched the Ghana-USA game.
I was just about to say.
All of the round two games have been absolute rippers. I think the World Cup's finally come alive. But yeah, the US-Ghana game was great. I mean, I actually felt a bit sorry for the States. Fred, I don't know what you thought, but I thought they were playing some good football there for a while, and I thought they might shade it. And then the goal in extra time just came out of the blue, but what a goal it was.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And most notably as well, Asamoah Gyan. I mean, what a player that guy is. I mean, he's been outstanding for them.
He has. And he was determined to score and qualify for the next round, and that's what he did.
That's right.
They've got a young team, so there's some future for the Black Stars, the pride of Africa. Do you think this momentum and Africa's backing? Well, obviously you do. You think semi-finals?
Oh yeah, I mean, we're going for the semi-finals. Everybody in Ghana is going for semi-finals. Africa is going for the semi-finals, so there's no way we're going to lose there.
Interesting revelations.
Are they the team that most South Africans will be backing?
Oh yeah, I mean, not only South Africans, all of Africa, everybody's back in Ghana. So, Ghana, go Ghana.
That's all that counts, go Ghana. So, now we've got the remaining round of 16 fixtures. Netherlands versus Slovakia, which we know about the result.
Yes.
Brazil versus Chile.
Ooh, what a game. Can I just say, and I want to talk to my daughter here, so if everybody else could just, you know...
Tune out.
Zara, I don't know that waking up at 4 in the morning and starting to cry and needing to be rocked back to sleep for an entire hour, meaning that I miss substantial parts of the Brazil game, is going to do you any favours. And as soon as you get some pocket money, it will be docked.
It will be docked for all of that World Cup interruptions. Predictions for the Brazil-Chile game?
Brazil-Chile game? Oh, I'm thinking 3-0.
Yeah.
For those of you listening to the podcast, again, you would have already known the results as well. But big predictions then.
Yeah. Well, Brazil have won that. But Spain-Portugal, which is tomorrow morning, so most people listening to podcasts will get it.
That's right.
I'm really looking forward to that game. I think that game is going to be a cracker.
4:30 a.m., they're playing that at Greenpoint Stadium. Results?
Oh.
It's going to be a tight game. I might even go to venge the suggestion that it may go into penalty shootout.
Really?
Yeah.
I think Ronaldo's not going to turn up because he hasn't so far. And I think Spain and more importantly, the Barca midfield are going to boss that game.
Terry, what do you think?
Yeah, tough one to call. I think Villa is on fire at the moment. He's playing really well, but surprisingly enough, Torres seems to be woefully out of form. But I just think, the Spain midfield, if they click, you know, if they can bring Fabregas off the bench, you know, doesn't have to start, that's some midfield. Mm-hmm. I think they'll just be a little bit too strong for Portugal. The other game, of course, is Paraguay with Japan, which I actually think will be another great game, and I'm really hoping Japan win.
Yeah, our Asian cousins.
Our Asian cousins.
I think from free kicks they can win this game.
Mm. Paraguay versus Japan, 12 a.m. at the Lotus Versfield Stadium. So what are our game predictions for results for that one?
Oh, I think I might go 2-0 Japan.
2-0 Japan?
Yep, and Spain-Portugal, 2-1.
2-1. So three big games there, and obviously for us as Australian fans it doesn't mean much anymore, but the question that I have, who are you supporting now that Australia is out?
You know what? I think I'm going to... I can't bring myself to support Maradona.
No,
I can't do it.
I'm jumping on the Maradona bandwagon.
He's a crazy ex-druggie who dresses like a pimp. He's just... it's insane. I do like his beard though, but I can't bring myself... I'm going to support Germany. They are playing some great football. Great football.
I agree. I like that as well. Yep. There, I'm torn between the two. I'd like to see Argentina do well because I think Maradona is just crazy, and I love him for that fact. And I think, you know, perhaps they could deserve to win. It could be, you know, their time to shine for the World Cup. Terry, what do you think? Who are you supporting?
Argentina, to be honest with you, and you know, if Lionel Messi decides to actually score a goal, they're going to be unstoppable. I mean, he's been fantastic this tournament. He must be the unluckiest player in the whole World Cup, but he's just brilliant. But on the other hand, Germany have actually been outstanding. Their game against England was terrific too, so can't wait for that game. I think Argentina, I'd like to see an Argentina-Holland final. I'm a big fan
of Argentina-Holland final, but will they make it? I mean, now, despite the fact it doesn't matter who you're supporting, who do you think now, particularly because we're coming so close to the end now, who do you think is going to win it?
I think Germany's going to win it and be a Germany-Holland final.
Germany-Holland final. Wow.
Yeah. Argentina-Holland final with Holland to shade it. Revenge for 1978.
And with that, lads, it's been an absolute pleasure hosting the show once again. Paddy, thanks for joining us. Terry. And thank you to our guest, Fred, as well. But as always, if you are going to the Near Post...
Get there first.
Post. Get there first.